Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 3rd of August, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerris, with me in the studio, Mike Robinson. And we're delighted we'll be joined again today by Patrick Henningsen. Well, Mike, Brexit. We've been warned that Brexit was coming up. We've been told that the United Kingdom is going to leave the European Union. The Conservative Party assuring us that Brexit is real. Is it real?
Don't think so. So there was a meeting yesterday, Euro-GMO meeting, represented by members of the government chemist, representatives of the government chemist. This was the interactive DNA workshop. This was Dr. Malcolm Burns, represented the UK at the European Network of GMO Laboratories Steering Committee. And it was actually held a couple of weeks ago. Dr. Burns, who is the principal scientist and special advisor to the government chemist, represented the UK there. And in fact, he was, during the course of the meeting, they discussed various things. But at the end of it, they approved a draft proposal to establish a new working group on the issue of GMO and asked Dr. Malcolm Burns to participate and contribute to the mandate of the working group as time goes on. So, you know, here we have really two stories in one. The fact that this work is going on will be of interest to some people. But I really just wanted to make the point that here's another one of these European institutions, which we're showing no signs of extracting ourselves from. And I'm not suggesting necessarily that we should extract ourselves from it, but if we are genuinely leaving the European Union, why are we continuing to contribute in this way? It is an interesting question.
It's a very interesting question. And the easiest answer is that we're not actually leaving, and we're going to continue to cooperate and collaborate and be unified with the EU at every twist and turn.
Absolutely. Now, yesterday we were discussing the issue of restrictions on freedoms, particularly the freedom of speech on the internet. So I thought it was a little ironic that today a Conservative Home website is publishing this article, Britain must be a champion of freedom above all things. And of course, here they're criticising Venezuela. I'm not going to get into that conversation at the moment. I just wanted to have a quiet smirk to ourselves about the fact that the Conservatives clearly lack quite a bit of self-awareness here. While the government pursues a policy of removing freedoms at every turn, and yet they're publishing articles like this.
Well, this is a nice little lead-in to the beloved Conservative Party, Mike, because a member of the public has been speaking with Theresa May's close media team over the last few days. And what the person has been asking is that, is the Conservative Party going to apologise for the fact that Tim Fortescue revealed in that BBC video clip, Tim Fortescue, Conservative Party whip back in 1973, and he said on BBC film that members of Parliament had come to the whips with all sorts of problems, including little boys. So the question that was put through to Theresa May's media team was, will the Conservative Party apologise for the fact that it's quite clear that we had Conservative MPs abusing children? Well, this caused a little bit of a furore. So let's come into this a bit. We better get a picture of Theresa May up. It is quite a flattering picture, Mike. You're absolutely right. And this is the one she uses on her own website. So obviously she'd want to look her best. But her press team's headed up by a gentleman called Mitchell Berry. But he's really spilt the beans, because when he was asked, will the Prime Minister be apologising for the fact that the Conservatives have been involved in child abuse and used their whips to cover it up, he started to backpedal pretty quickly. He tried to say, oh, this is all being dealt with by the Child Abuse Inquiry, which it isn't. He then tried to say it was being dealt with by the Wiltshire police investigation into Ted Heath. Well, this is nothing to do with Ted Heath in the first instance. It's to do with the publicly filmed statement of party whip Tim Fortescue admitting that Conservatives have come forward to say that they've been involved in the abuse of children. So remarkable when a simple question is put to the to the top of the tree, to Theresa May's press team, they get very wobbly indeed. There's the inset picture of Tim Fortescue. If you haven't seen the video clip, simply put his name into the YouTube search box and you'll come up with a little film clip and you can hear exactly what this man says. So if we sort of sum it up for Theresa May, she admits she was Home Secretary and was therefore ultimately responsible for the imprisoning of Nottingham Beechwood child abuse whistleblower Melanie Shaw. We know that Theresa May doesn't care that Melanie has spent a year in solitary confinement. We're very good at criticising the governments overseas on their human rights abilities. In this country, Theresa May, blue rinse Tory woman, very happy to put a child abuse survivor in solitary confinement for a year. And of course, why are they going for Melanie Shaw? Because Melanie knows a little bit too much about the involvement of MPs in the abuse. So let's bring in Melanie. This is the state of the British leadership, Mike, and I've deliberately used that term because we'll be coming back onto it. We stand on the world stage criticising other governments on their human rights, and we have this filthy organisation controlling the country at the moment. So we deduce from the comments of Mr. Berry that the Conservative Party will not be apologising for using party whips to cover up child abuse.
Why should they?
Why should they? Well, we thought it'd be interesting to have a look at Mr. Berry. I'm pretty sure that this is his photograph, although you noticed on the LinkedIn header where you can see some details on his career background, there is no photo. But interestingly enough, this photo is on the internet. And if you click it, it takes you straight to that LinkedIn profile. So we're pretty sure this is the right man. Michael Berry. We know it's the right man because we can actually have a look at what his experience has been. And what's interesting is that when you get into this gentleman, you find that he's been involved in monitoring digital broadcast media channels, working up lines and handling difficult calls, basically. So he's not about putting out the truth about what's going on. He's about working up lines. We've got another job here that he did prior to that, so you can have a look at that, assistant editor. And this one, really fascinating, this is research editor with Dow Jones, and it says proprietary investigation and reporting of special interest persons and, quote, adverse media people entities. So this man is a specialist at digging into anybody who's daring to start to ask the right questions. This is not a civil servant, Mike. This is a guru who is involved in spin and propaganda, cleaning up messes. So he's got quite an interesting background. Some of it he spent in Australia. You can have a look at these yourself. Some of it he spent in Japan. But my point is, do I get a feeling that here is a man, career civil servant, best interests of his country at heart? No, he's right in there amongst the dirty dealings of the Tory party. And if there's been anything with children, it's going to be covered up. And I thought this probably sums it up, because we got the Mirror today going in extremely strongly on the social worker, Deborah McQueen. She's allegedly failed to adequately safeguard 11 vulnerable girls who were groomed by the 9 men. This is the Rochdale abuse scandal. She faces a raft of allegations surrounding the children, which claim she failed to adequately protect youngsters who were in grave danger. So this woman vilified in the press, maybe quite rightly so. But on the other hand, we've got the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, who's orchestrating a cover up of official abuse. And of course, there's no press reporting on that whatsoever.
No.
And we'll bring in this gentleman. We've talked about him over the months before, Mike Veal. Now, I'm pleased to say that as a result of UK column publicity and the fact we've been asking our viewers and listeners to help support this gentleman, the views have now gone up to 11,500. But as we say at the top there, this is the police officer investigating Ted Heath for child abuse issues. He's already been pressurised by the British government to pull out, to shut this investigation down. He refuses to do so. This man deserves a lot of support. So I'm going to ask again today, if you haven't had a look at that YouTube clip, please go and have a look at it. I think you'll be very impressed. And if you are impressed, share it with your family and friends.
Now, justice reinvestment. Brian, have you heard of that term before?
I hadn't till this morning, Mike, I have to say.
Well, there's a seminar being held in Manchester on the 13th of September. This is just under the heading of Justice Devolution. But the subhead is Delivering Better Justice Through Justice Reinvestment. So I needed to go and have a look and find out what justice reinvestment is. It's something which hasn't really caught on in Britain just yet, but in Australia and other countries it seems to be quite popular. And it basically, they say that evidence shows that strategic community-driven investment in localised early intervention, prevention and diversionary solutions can reduce crime, build local capacity and strengthen local communities. And they say if there's less crime, there's less imprisonment. So that all sounds very good. But as you start to dig a little bit deeper, what you actually discover is that justice reinvestment begins with data. So in order to reinvest in justice, you've got to gather lots of data on people. Where is crime occurring? What type of crime? Why is crime occurring? And so it's really all about data collection and snooping on people to an ever greater degree.
And this is the common theme in more and more directions now. We're seeing that this desire to hoover up data on the public in order to protect us is the excuse.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's just give a little bit of promotion to Sam, the blogger's work here. And several people sent me through this particular video where Sam is talking on his daily vlog about the encryption ban, retro Rudd style. And this is a very interesting little clip. I think people would do well to go and have a listen to watch it. But basically, he's saying that Amber Rudd as Home Secretary is literally owned by the Prime Minister, Theresa May, because obviously Theresa May got her into power. He's saying that this mysterious lady Rudd is a fast rising political star. But he says you only have to scratch the surface to see the Rudd family are connected to the City of London. And then he goes on to talk about Rudd taking over her father's stock trading company. But the real point that he's making is that when we talk about the government wanting access to everybody's emails, what Sam is saying, in his opinion, aside from this overall net where the intelligence services, the government want to know everything about each and every one of us, Sam is saying he thinks that the keenness is to get in amongst these private emails, because people who have knowledge of what the big global trading companies are doing can do immense damage to them if they are talking about what's going on in the inside of these companies. And he is just saying that his feeling is that some of this intent that nobody should be allowed a private electronic conversation is in order to protect the devious and criminal activities of these huge global corporations. I just thought that was an interesting angle.
Okay, let's move on to media matters. And we've mentioned BBC Media Action quite a bit in the past, but they seem to have a new website up all about development. So why we use the media for development. And I thought it was quite an interesting thing. They are promoting various case studies. This is one, Story. This is all about governance in Nigeria, apparently. We've mentioned that they produce local programs in the past, Brian. This is one of those. It's called Story. It says, on air since 2004, Story is a radio drama that aims to increase Nigerians' awareness of their rights and responsibilities and how they can hold government to account. So the BBC feels that it needs to go into a foreign country and explain to people all about rights, responsibilities and holding governments to account. Yeah. The BBC doesn't hold our government to account in Britain. But we need to, they need to go into other countries to explain that. From its very beginning, it has set out to stimulate debate and more recently has also encouraged the use of dialogue to settle conflicts, is what they say. Focusing on themes such as education, electricity, water and roads, Story explores how people can be involved in public decisions that affect their own lives through participation and public petitions, legal protest or discussion with decision makers. Set at the heart of West Africa in a busy fictional market. What does this remind you of?
Well, to me, straight away, this reminds us reminds me of them going into Kazakhstan and getting amongst the communities there.
Absolutely, but my point here is busy fictional market. This is kind of EastEnders for Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, and so if anybody wants to consider the effect, the cultural effect that EastEnders has had on Britain, we might consider what kind of effect that this kind of program is going to have in these countries as well. I just wanted to highlight, I know it's in really small text at the bottom here, but who has funded this? The Department for International Development.
Yeah. So this is the British government at work criticising and subverting the communities and politics in other nation states, and they do it under the cover of the fact that it's a BBC so-called charity.
Absolutely.
It's despicable, this. I very much hope that if we've got any members of the audience today watching from overseas, that you will take the point that here is the British government telling other countries, communities what to do, getting in, breaking up their culture. This is the same British government that, of course, wants to cover up its involvement in the abuse of children. The hypocrisy is just more than breathtaking. It really does make me ashamed to be part of UK at the moment.
Well, absolutely. Now, I'm actually just going to change the order on the fly here just a little bit, Brian, because that's British soft power and pushing this kind of subversion into other countries. We have a little video clip that this was from the end of July, and it's Congressman Steve King. Let's just have a quick look at that, and then we can discuss it.
I just came back not that long ago from the Balkans, where I sat in a place like Macedonia. And there I learned that the United States government, borrowing money from China and Saudi Arabia, had handed over somewhere at least $5 million in contracts transferred through USAID into George Soros organizations that were used to manipulate elections in the Balkans. And that's just particularly Macedonia, not including the neighboring countries that are there. And some of that money was used to translate Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals into Macedonians to distribute the books, and the Rules for Radicals and the actions of radicals were manifested within the election efforts in that part of the world. So I would say that the Obama administration is a long ways from clean on this.
So I had intended to put that in at the end of another section, kind of related to Russiagate, but actually I think it's more appropriate here. And maybe this is, we're talking about Western nations. We're busy criticizing Russia, claiming that Russia is interfering in Western nations, but more and more evidence and more serious people, including congressmen and others, talking about this, Western governments interfering in the governance of other countries.
Well, that congressman hit the nail on the head, Mike, but he's mentioning Saul Alinsky and Rules for Radicals. Of course, we've talked about that particular book by Saul Alinsky many times. And what we've been pointing out is that both the Labour Party and the Conservative Party have been boasting of the fact that they have been using Saul Alinsky strategy within their own policies. So we've got a British government using the type of material this congressman is warning is being used by George Soros to destabilise other countries. And we're now into the reality that we are being attacked by our own government. This country is being destabilised. And we've had Nicholas Bowles, Conservative MP, who said a couple of years ago just that the Conservatives plan to introduce a period of destructive chaos as a means of achieving change in the public sector. We're being told what's happening here, Mike.
I realize I'm sort of dropping this on you, Patrick, but let's bring Patrick Henningsen onto the program. Have you any thoughts about this Western interference in other countries and just the sheer hypocrisy that with amongst certain sections of the political class and the media, but more people willing to talk about this openly?
Sure. It's hard to know where to start because the laundry list is so long. What used to be done directly by the U.S. government, for instance, is now being conducted through foundations, through NGOs, the National Endowment for Democracy, the National Democratic Institute, and also projects funded, like you've said there, through USAID and through charities as well. And so this is what used to be called smart power. Now replaced, or soft power now replaced by smart power. And so we also see a revolving door between governments and people who work in high levels of these organizations that are involved in this sort of perception management. So a revolving door between third sector international charities and foundations and government and also corporate entities as well. Sure, you can look at some of the people in the UK who fit that very same profile, including Jo Cox and her husband, the late Jo Cox and Brendan Cox as well, in that sort of circle as well. So this is how our governments are affecting change on the ground in so many different countries around the world. By the way, the United States was heavily involved in manipulating Boris Yeltsin into power. If people have a short memory, after the fall of the Soviet Union, the United States was right there, even dispatched advisors from the White House, I believe, in to help Boris Yeltsin in his election campaign. I mean, imagine if that was done. Imagine if the U.S. or imagine if Vladimir Putin dispatched three of his top advisors to go and help with the Trump campaign. Openly, you know, imagine
we've lost him, unfortunately.
Exactly what the US did.
Yeah. Indeed. Okay, Brian, a quick advice.
Well, I thought we'd just have a quick ad for ourselves, in fact. So we got the UK column website here, particularly good news yesterday. Obviously, you did that with Patrick. I was in other places. But I just thought how important this was, that UK column now really warning that we can see the British government clamping down on any form of alternative media. We know that pressure's already been put on YouTube and it's coming on Facebook and others. And we want to say that if you value what we're doing, it's not just a question of watching. We need your subscriptions to help keep this going financially. And we also need people to spread the information that we're pushing out. So it's not just watch it and, well, that's it. Wait for the next day's news. Why are we doing this? We're doing it because we hope that our viewers and listeners will use the information we're giving and they will spread it far and wide and they will be challenging these very authorities. So that's it. If you're not a subscriber of UK Column, please consider becoming one. Thank you.
Okay, let's move over to Russia and the sanctions on Russia. We mentioned this a day or two ago. President Trump has signed H.R. 3364, which is the Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Act. So that is now law. But he issued a statement as he signed it and said it included a number of fairly clear unconstitutional provisions. He still signed it, though. He said these include violating the president's exclusive constitutional authority to recognize foreign governments, including their territorial bounds. It allows Congress to change the law without going through the constitutionally prescribed procedures. It directs the executive branch employees to, quote, undertake certain diplomatic initiatives without presidential authority and authorization. And so he said, today I've signed into law H.R. 3364, the Countering America's adversaries through Sanctions Act. While I favor tough measures to punish and deter aggressive and destabilizing behavior by Iran, North Korea and Russia, this legislation is significantly flawed. Yet despite its problems, I'm signing the bill for the sake of national unity. It represents the will of the American people to see Russia take steps to improve relations with the United States. We hope there will be a cooperation between our two countries on major global issues so that these sanctions will no longer be necessary. And he said that my administration will give careful and respectful consideration to the preferences expressed by the Congress and will implement them in a manner consistent with the President's constitutional authority to conduct foreign relations. And Patrick, the two little bits out of that that I thought were interesting. The first is that it represents the will of the American people to see Russia take steps to improve relations with the United States, and he hopes there will be cooperation between our two countries on major global issues. So he seems to be sending a little message out there that actually what he wants to see, closer relations, and also the fact that he's saying that he will implement this legislation in a manner consistent with the President's constitutional authority to conduct foreign relations. So it seems to be a mixed message here, Pat. And on one hand, he's doing this, he signed this bill, and he says in the interest of national unity, but he seems to be still sending messages that he actually wants closer relations with Russia.
So it is odd that the President would sign a bill like this and then issue a statement immediately, almost like a retraction, saying, I'm sorry, I signed this. It's not a very good bill. This is kind of what's happened here. And so what you have on the surface is this could be construed as a chief executive who is weak, who is not acting on principle, but in fact, who is acting on politics. And so in the issue or the interest of unity, this is a political directive, not a directive of principle. But as you rightly pointed out, Mike, in this statement and in Trump's statement afterwards is the seeds of a potential constitutional confrontation. And so it's very clear that the United States trying to do international racketeering and intimidating or attacking other countries doing trade with Russia is completely unconstitutional, is completely outside any legal bounds. And so that's what we might have here. And look, in terms of Russia, how Russia's viewing this is pretty obvious. Russia already has read this as a political signature by Donald Trump. And I think this isn't going to change any of the sort of personal communications between the leadership of the United States and Russia at all. Russia's well aware of the complete political maelstrom that Russiagate has set off in America, and that the United States is basically clinically insane from a political standpoint in its sort of madcap effort to scapegoat the loss of Hillary Clinton still and the Democratic Party and the neoconservatives' drive to unseat the Trump agenda, whatever that agenda is. They want to make sure that it doesn't happen. First and foremost, they don't want to see positive relationship between the U.S. and Russia. Everything is predicated on that. NATO expansion, the conflicts in Syria, aggressive postures towards Iran, and sanctions, economic sanctions. It's all predicated on bad relations between Russia and the U.S. So those parties in the U.S. that want bad relations want to keep bad relations going as long as possible. It's great for the defense industry profits right now. Certainly, any detente between the U.S. and Russia will be very bad for the stock prices of Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and Boeing.
Absolutely. Well, what is the EU's reaction been to this? Well, Jean-Claude Juncker was pretty quick to respond. He was pretty upset about it. He said that Europe will come up with an adequate response very soon, within days, if these sanctions in any way damage European Union economic interests. We must defend our economic interests even against the United States, and that's what we're going to do, is what he said. And he also drew attention to the fact that this bill, or this act as it now is, could have unpredictable consequences for the EU, particularly in the area of energy. So that's what they're concerned about. The Germans, on the other hand, are saying that they go further. Actually, they say that U.S. sanctions against Russia violate international law, the economy minister, said that we consider this as being against international law, plain and simple. Of course, we don't want a trade war, but it is important that the European Commission now looks at countermeasures. And she said that the Americans cannot punish German companies because they operate economically in another country. So pretty strong words there, Pat. I think Patrick has gone, unfortunately.
No, I'm back. I'm back.
Okay. Pretty strong words there, Patrick.
Yeah. So what's interesting is, for the last year, we've heard the EU and media outlets throughout Europe basically putting out fake news that Russia was meddling in the elections of Germany, France, Holland, and also had something behind the Brexit vote. So now we see this U-turn now. And by the way, RT, Russia Today, RT, was doing stories about how European businesses have been hurt by these U.S.-imposed sanctions and getting the EU to go along with the U.S. sanctions agenda with regards to Russia. And they've been doing that for the last two, 3 years. So, RT is supposedly the disinformation outlet that's somehow influencing European elections. Now you have the Brussels, Jean-Paul Juncker, actually parroting reports that have been coming out of Russian press now for the last 3 years. It doesn't make any economic sense to carry on with this sanctions regime. Everybody in Europe knows it. And let's see if anyone in Brussels, if they really have the spine to stand up to the United States. Where is Britain going to be if that happens? By the way, how is that going to look diplomatically? That's an interesting question I might throw back to you and Brian, Mike.
It's a very good question. What do you think?
Well, I think if you go down that debate, we've got to get into who is actually controlling the markets. It's a subject beyond nation states. And then you start to see that you can understand how things that one nation is saying, this doesn't work with us, European Union saying something different. If you go higher or you go deeper than that, you're into who is controlling the trade and the money in the first place.
Let's look at the situation in Trump's administration in general. I think it was the day before yesterday in the evening, Rex Tillerson held a press conference where he was absolutely suggesting that the administration wants to develop ties with Russia and China. He said that the question now is that we believe we're at a bit of a pivot point in this relationship because of how China has progressed now to become the second largest economy in the world, and they will continue to grow in importance to the global economy. He said that looking back over the last 50 years, that there's been major changes since the time of the collapse of European communism. He said that although the Trump administration wants to make America great again, and that Trump is always saying America first, that doesn't mean America alone. So he's making quite positive noises with regard to Russia and China. At the same time, though, having Trump said in the past that they were going to drop the idea of regime change, he also in the same press conference said that it continues to be their view that the Assad regime has no role in the future governance of Syria. But in the meantime, that was Tillerson. Then Mike Pence, the vice president, was over in Montenegro. And as we know, Montenegro just joined NATO. And he's talking to them about their courage, particularly in the face of Russian pressure, that their courage inspires the world, and that he commends them for that. The Russians, in response to Mike Pence's words, and particularly the issue of Montenegro joining NATO, said that such cooperation only becomes a problem for us, the Russians, when it leads to the expansion of various alliances and their military infrastructure towards our borders. And so, Patrick, this seems to me to be a very schizophrenic position within the US administration. And it's still problematic to try to decode what is actually going on here.
Sure. It does remind me a little bit of the schizophrenia that's spilled over from the Obama administration, where you had sort of the Department of Defense, the Pentagon and the State Department seeming to pull, in two different directions. And you'd often have conflicting statements between, let's say, Secretary of Defense Ash Carter, and John Kerry as Secretary of State at the time. Meanwhile, Obama was sort of hiding in the background, leading from behind. And so I think now we're seeing something similar. Trump is caught in the same sort of situation where you have the sort of varying agendas. One is a military industrial Pentagon agenda, clearly. And then you have the State Department seems to be acting really in the interests of diplomacy and global trade and good relations. This is embodied by the statements made by Rex Tillerson. And Trump is staying pretty much a little bit in the background on this. He's not backing up his Secretary of State, and he's not coming out and sort of hitting him over the head either by backing the Pentagon line. So Trump is really leading from behind in the much the same way Obama is. And if this says anything, it does reinforce the idea that many people have that the sort of the deep state is really all pervasive in the United States, whereby any individual politician will not be able to get an agenda through easily. Even if it's an agenda of reform that has positive implications, it's still going to be difficult because these sort of things are well entrenched.
Okay, well, let's look at what Britain's response to sanctions in general is, because, of course, Britain's still presenting the idea that we're leaving the European Union, and they're pretty concerned that if we leave the European Union, that Britain's ability to levy sanctions are based on European legislation. So they have published the response to a public consultation, which is now complete, they say that to enable post-Brexit Britain to continue to play a central role in global sanctions to combat the threats of terrorism, conflict and the proliferation of nuclear weapons, they are proposing additional powers to cut off funding for terrorists by making it easier to freeze assets and block access to bank accounts. Of course, not just talking about terrorism in this. This sanctions bill is going to ensure that the UK has the necessary legal powers to implement sanctions after Brexit, as well as greater flexibility in choosing when and how to introduce new measures. They say that the UK will also continue to play a central role in negotiating global sanctions as a member of the UN Security Council. This is what the relevant Minister of State had to say. The new sanctions bill, this is Alan Duncan, will ensure that when the UK leaves the European Union, we retain the ability to impose, update and lift sanctions regimes. So that's good stuff, isn't it?
Well, I just jotted, while you were taking us through that, Mike, I just jotted down here the legal framework to me represents a template, or it represents a pro forma. If you analyse what that really is, it's a straitjacket. So it isn't that each thing is going to be dealt with on its merit when it comes up. We're going to have a straitjacket in order to have a more generalised government view on the issues put in place. Not sure I explained this very well, but what I really mean is what happened is just common sense and intellect that as an issue comes up, you deal with it. Mm. Now we've got to have a template.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when I showed that little video clip earlier on of Congressman Steve King, he was actually speaking at a hearing looking at the situation with James Comey's involvement in several recent controversial cases, including Russiagate. The Guardian reporting that Comey has now signed a $2 million book deal. Is this his payoff for losing his job, Pat?
Okay, this is one of many payoffs that this person will be receiving for a job well done. And so it's no surprise to see this. Look, Comey was instrumental in really propagating the mess, the political circus that was the Hillary email scandal plus Russiagate. He made sure that there were no charges made or no really serious investigation against Hillary Clinton for her misdeeds as Secretary of State or the Clinton Foundation. And by the way, James Comey, who's a former board of directors member of HSBC, and this is a bank that had very close ties to the Clinton Foundation, at least Clinton Foundation clients all banking with HSBC. Comey was put in there to stage manage the fallout from the HSBC drugs and terrorism money laundering case, which they were found guilty, but they had a deferred prosecution thanks to Eric Holder, and others in the sort of Obama inner circle, of which James Comey is an intimate member of. And so here we having a nice little swan song after this $2 million book deal. This elite fixer will land a board position with one of the top investment banks. And so he, by the way, he's also worked at the same law firm as Loretta Lynch, Hogan and Harston. I think it's now called Hogan and Lovells in Washington, D.C. And so there's a interesting special VIP members club there. And then you can see that's how Washington really works.
Okay. Now, a week or so ago, Alex Thompson was on the program last week, and he was talking about the attempts to ramp up the South Ossetian situation once again with green signs being put up and allegations that Russia was attempting to move the border between North and South Ossetia. Well, TASS here reporting that, in fact, the Georgians are now aiming to resolve any further conflict with Russia. They don't want basically, Saakashvili is out of the way, and so they don't seem to be that interested in pursuing that particular policy agenda. They're saying Georgia will do its utmost to achieve a political settlement of the conflict with Russia with the support of international strategic partners, peacefully and in a constructive way. Georgia's peaceful unification is the country's major task. So that's we wait to see how that pans out, but that looks like relatively positive news. Newsweek today. The headline is Unlikely Friends, ISIS and the Italian Mafia Working Together to Bring Oil into Europe. And now, yesterday, Patrick, we were discussing a sexual abuse case in Oxford and a particular chief constable who had historically been covering up child sexual abuse in her area of Thames Valley Police. That's Sarah Thornton. And you were making the point about long-term investigations. So Newsweek publishing this article today about ISIS and the Italian Mafia working together to bring oil into Europe. But in fact, you had been covering this issue as far back as 2015. So this is 21st Century Wire special report, ISIS oil, follow the money, and in brackets, back to Europe. So this is not a new story.
No, it's not. But it's a little bit of fake news clickbait by Newsweek. And Newsweek has really sort of fallen off the ledge in terms of a respectable news outlet. It's sad to see an 80-year brand go down the toilet that quickly, as we saw with the Kurt Eichenwald story the last couple of weeks. But the real story with regards, and if you read actually that Newsweek article, it says links between the mafia and is this ISIS oil? It's inconclusive. We're not sure. We can't confirm it. Yet they splash that across the headline, which shows a level of desperation by Newsweek. But this just covers up the real story. And it's not the Italian mafia that you should be looking at. It's the corporate mafia based in London. Okay, because there is a British firm called Janelle Energy. And at the head of that company, I don't know about today, but while this illicit ISIS oil trade was going on, this was Nat Rothschild and Tony Hayward. Those are two names that should be familiar to everybody, especially Tony Hayward and his involvement in the BP Deepwater Horizon disaster. Okay. And so what are they doing? They're working with the Kurdish regional government in Iraq, and who are working with middlemen in getting illicit ISIS oil. And this is being channeled via the Kurdish regional government and then into Janelle Energy and then making its way to refineries, I believe on the Turkish coast, possibly, and then on its way into Europe. That's Janelle Energy. And guess what? They've done this in consultation with the British Foreign Office. All the details are in that document, which are linked to in that report that we published, Randy Johnson, in 2015, Mike. It's all there. Has anything done about this? Nafis Ahmed, former Guardian writer, he's also uncovered this to great detail in an independent investigation. This has to be a scandal, yet it was just swept under the rug, and the mainstream media will not touch it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Patrick.
Well, we can stay on the subject of terror and come in at a slightly different angle. This is the Mail report on the trial of Nawid Ali, Kobeib Hussain and Mohibur Rahman. And the headline here, MI5 officers banter was like TV's Homeland Homeland Security Service came under scrutiny during terror trial because of undercover officers' embarrassing text. And we got a little bit of that. One deleted message from an MI5 officer known as Vincent read, "The situation we find ourselves in with British Security Services is not ideal. Either way, I'm even more determined to put in an, quote, Oscar performance when I get in that witness box," he's talking about. On another occasion, he said, "As you know, I'm working tomorrow. I think I'm right in saying that this will be the first time you've covered me since becoming a newly qualified cover. I feel I must warn you there are certain things I need to make you aware of." He then goes on to say what those things are. "I cannot under any circumstance be trusted with any of the following: small children, guns, loose women, £50 notes, strippers, massage parlours, any nightclub in Prague or Liverpool, bald women, they really turn me on, any car that will exceed 70 miles an hour, five-star hotels, any one of my three passport, Jacob's Creek, sparkling Shiraz, Dalmore, car strength, whiskey." These are pretty immature comments from this man. And of course, it was ultimately used by the defence to say what was actually going on in this case, because the defendant, or at least one of the defendants, was back on the subject of entrapment by security services. So we picked up on this little bit here right at the end of the article. We had Detective Chief Superintendent Matt Ward, head of West Midlands Counter-Terrorism Unit. He said he was really proud of his officers, particularly our undercover operatives who were in an incredibly dangerous situation. So we've got an amazing spread of opinion there. We've got some clearly very, very immature MI5 agents working alongside police, all counter-terrorist operations. But Matt Ward there said, "Well, my boys were in there doing a good job." Well, were they? Who briefed them? What was the job? Of course, the public doesn't know. But a little bit of homework we came up with the superintendent himself. This is a little video clip that Matt Ward was giving. And it's the setting up of yet another system to get local people to spy on each other. He said this week, and that was going back to March this year, we're launching Action Counters Terrorism. It's a national campaign designed to encourage members of the community to phone us, email us to let us know if they suspect anything which causes them concern. We need to get as much information as we can to keep the communities of West Midlands safe. There's the raking in of the information that you've been talking about, Mike. And I just found it fascinating that this operation clearly gone badly wrong. This is one of the key men behind it. And did I find interesting? Well, this Guardian report is talking about them working with future leaders. So we're back into the fact we've got special people, specially selected. And here we are, Detective Chief Inspector Matt Ward is one of those specially chosen people to become leaders. And here he is implicated with an operation which the Mail, at least, is pointing a finger and saying something was not right. So it brings us back onto this theme of what is going on. Here's Sarah Thornton that you mentioned yesterday. She headed up Oxford Police when we were interested in what she was doing. But, of course, she's gone on to chair the National Police Chiefs Council. So one minute she's part of a force covering up the abuse of children. The next minute she's leading all of the police forces. And here it is. She says that one of her key areas is police leadership.
Yes, because she's another common purpose future leader.
Common purpose future leader. And we're back on the subject of follow the trail of money and the abuse of children. And you're getting somewhere close to what's going on. Patrick, any parting comments from you?
Well, just back to that West Midlands police story. I think this is the story where the police set up a fake courier company to target terrorism suspects. And so really what you see here is a dangerous trend where the British law enforcement are using the American style of inventing terror plots and then posing for the cameras and taking all the public adulation in the press for busting a terrorist plot, which they themselves put together. They even started the business, recruited the people, put things in their hands, gave them money, went out and purchased things possibly on their behalf. This is all coming out of the taxpayer tranche and using this endless web of so-called informants, many of whom are criminals themselves, used by law enforcement, and it's total entrapment. In fact, most of the big high-profile terror busts in the United States since 9/11 have been fabricated entrapment-style creative FBI plots that are literally putting it into the hands of the suspect, you know, and then claiming there was a bust or a plot, even egging on the person to talk radically or whatever and get them to go, you know, get a bus ticket to Washington, D.C., in like the case of Chris Cornell in January 2015 when he was busted for plotting to attack Congress. And he was a depressed, confused teenager from Ohio who didn't even make it out of his town. He was busted at the local gun shop by the FBI, and they made it like it was this big terror bust. Is this what Britain's going to be doing now? Inventing terrorist plots and then busting them and then posing in the press like they've done something? Because if they are, it's going to turn into a circus really fast.
Patrick, as always, you've taken us to the heart of the matter on that. Are we going to be doing this, or are the police going to be doing this? No, because they have been doing it. This is entrenched policy, and this is clearly the reality of what's going on. Hence that MI5 operative's comments about winning an Oscar for his performance in court. We'll be on the case of what's happening here in the UK Columns News come up. Patrick, thanks very much for joining us. And we will be back at the same time tomorrow, hopefully joined by David Scott with Northern Exposure. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Bye.